Are you ready for new dimensions and countless possibilities today and for the future? It's an exciting new time, and the answers are out there. So join Mary Jane Popp as she explores the unique and unusual for a better life on Pop Talk in search of the truth. And here she is, Mary Jane Popp.
And welcome to Pop Talk. Got a good one, too. This hour is going to be an experience and a half. A little bit later on, we're going to try and answer an age-old question. Does heaven exist? And if so, what is heaven? I've got a lady who had two near-death experiences, and she's got some real vivid ideas as to what heaven is, what God is. And so it's going to be kind of an interesting thing as far as I'm concerned. You know me. I'm curious about everything, including a new magazine/newspaper that really touches on America. And we're going to be talking about that because we need all the help we can get. Let's face it, folks. The world is changing very rapidly. But are we changing with it? And is that good or bad? Let's find out.
Extra, extra, hey, look at the headlines, historical news is being. Extra, extra, they're drawing a red line.
Well, where do we go from here? You know, we are going through some major changes, real changes. So are we headed to some endings and maybe new beginnings in 2025? Now, cultural trends are shaping America. And County Highway has become the voice of cultural insight and uncovers stories from forgotten corners of the nation. And there's an awful lot of those corners, let's be honest about it. But we want to track the questions that really shape our identity. So editors David Samuels and managing editor Ryan Baseman share their predictions for the five most significant cultural trends in 2025. Let's check them out. Nice to have you with us, Ryan.
Thanks, Mary Jane. Glad to be here.
You bet. Okay. So when you talk about County Highway, it's sort of a magazine newspaper combo, right?
That's right. We do magazine style writing, but we print on newsprint because it's just frankly how we prefer to read.
Okay. So is it like, you know, newsprint like the Sun-Times in Chicago, where it's a magazine, but it's not a magazine?
Exactly. Like, we print on a full broadsheet, so the same size as, say, the New York Times, but use heavier, like slightly thicker, better paper stock because we only print six times a year, which doesn't sound like a lot compared to a daily, like, the New York Times, but when you're doing large magazine features that are more in the style of, say, the New Yorker, or the Atlantic, or Harper's, it's actually quite a bit. So we print six times a year. Every other month we put out an issue, and it isn't like it's tied necessarily to that day or to that week. Much of the stuff that we're writing could apply to anything over the course of that calendar year or, say, 30, 40, 50 years from now.
Oh.
Which is something that we go for, is trying to find the nut of what's happening out there in the world. And we think of ourselves something like the New Yorker for everybody who doesn't live in New York.
Oh, gotcha. So how was County Highway born? I mean, with you and Daniel, or David?
David is he's the Wizard of Oz here. He thought up the idea and the concept during the pandemic when, you know, there was a lot of question about where people could get their information, and it was difficult to know exactly what was going on in the world. Digital channels were changing and, you know, becoming infrequently unreliable. And he said, hey, I think it would be nice if local newspapers could come back and people could get to know their neighbors and the world around them. And, of course, that's a big feat. David's been a journalist and writer and reporter for probably the last 30 years, and he's done cover stories for pretty much all of those big national magazines I just mentioned, from, you know, the Atlantic to the New Yorker to Harper's. He was a contributing editor at Harper's for about 20 years. And So he understands the periodical business. He understands Journalism Today, and he saw a big gap as in that there's a huge amount of the American population that doesn't really get covered in big stories.
But my curiosity is, you're a farmer on the central coast of California, and now you're working with County Highway.
That's right.
How did that happen? I mean, what is your background other than being a farmer?
Sure. Yeah, and I was fortunate to get myself into a graduate school program in New York, of course, because, like it or not, that is where the whole industry somewhat lives. And so I got an opportunity to move to New York, and they paid me to read for 2 years, and that was wonderful. And after getting my journalism degree, I started another publication called Soft Punk. And we grew pretty rapidly during the pandemic. I wrote for a couple other magazines while I was living there, and also during my time in Santa Cruz and San Francisco. I got my start really running a music festival in the Santa Cruz Mountains called Dio Fest, Do It Ourselves Fest.
Huh.
And through that experience, I started a small publication called The Dialogue, D-I-O Log. And then through that experience, editing and doing a lot of different media projects and having a lot of fun with music journalism, then found myself in New York, went to grad school, and started another magazine called Soft Punk, which somehow was very successful, and we did really great work. Then the pandemic hit. Things were difficult. We made it through. I ended up coming back to California, going back to farming full-time, and I was working on an avocado ranch and a berry farm and an organic row crop veggie farm and a vineyard, and then starting my own little homestead garden, 5 different farms.
Huh.
And then I was introduced to David through somebody that I used to work with, who's now an editor at Harper's, because David had this idea to, during the pandemic, start County Highway mm-hmm. as a way to bring people together. And he was looking for somebody like me who had experience starting publications and doing print distribution and working with established, respected writers, cultivating new people to come and do writing and reporting for us. And we met, and he said, "Hey, you seem like my guy. You want to start this with me and this other fellow named Walter Kern?" And I said, "Yeah, I'd love to. Let's go for it. So that's how we all came together.
It's just interesting to me because, you know, these are stories across the country. It's not just locally, like in California. It's all over the country that you write these stories. Is that correct?
That's right.
Okay, how do you get the stories?
Well, we all have our own little network. David's in upstate New York and has been doing big magazine work for 30-plus years. Walter Kern, our editor-at-large and also co-founder, lives in Montana. He was a Time Magazine reporter for a very long time. He also wrote for Harper's. He has a whole cohort of people that he works with, and then I'm more on the West Coast. So between the three of us, we scale the whole country.
Oh, okay.
And, believe it or not, a lot of our stories come to us from people sending an email and saying, "Hey, I live in Arizona, and I want to know what happened to the horses." Or, "Hey, I live in Florida, and there's a mud wrestling competition that I want to go and cover." Or, whatever it is. So in one part, it's us reaching out to people and commissioning these stories, things that we're interested in that we know that our readers would want to know about. And on the other hand, it's people reading County Highway and saying, "Man, I want to write for these guys." And they send us a nice note. And if it's a good story and they're skilled at writing, we'll work with them.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting that you mentioned that because local newspapers are surviving. I happen to be writing for Messenger Publishing in Northern California. Paul Scholl has 18 of those local newspapers. And mm-hmm. what I do is I take some of the interesting guests that I have on my show and I write about them. And people are interested in finding out new ideas, new concepts, things to think about. In addition to finding out that there's some really nice people out there and good people who are truly trying to make good things happen, right?
Exactly.
Okay. So you talk about trends that's happening in 2025. I want to go through those 5 because they have me fascinated. Okay. You say there's a revival of rural America. in what do you mean by rural America?
Well, I think, I mean, if you look at the demographics of the country, about 85% of people live in an urban or suburban neck of the woods, right? So that leaves 15% of the American populace living outside of those areas in rural townships and smaller municipalities, generally, you know, in the 50,000 or fewer range. Like, I live in San Luis Obispo County, which is larger than Los Angeles County, but it's only got about 250,000 total residents. Mm. So I live in a fairly rural part of California. And I think that this is something that really happened during the pandemic, when a lot of people had been attracted to the idea of what it would be like to not have to sit in traffic for an hour each way going to and from work every day. And what if I could just work from home and have, you know, my dog sleeping by my feet while I sit and I do my emails or whatever it is. Then with the pandemic, everybody was essentially forced to stay home for a period of time. We learned that, hey, the tools do exist for us to be able to exist in large markets and have careers without having to be in the office all the time. And so, I mean, I'm certainly a product of that story, that having spent a lot of my life in major metropolitan areas and now most of my adult life in rural areas, I've wanted to really make it work. And so County Highway is in many respects a publication that's for those people that, you know, are interested in the world and have experienced and interest reading big national publications, but maybe they don't speak to them the same way anymore. But they have a bar set of a certain measure of literary or repertorial rigor that they expect in the things that they're reading, but subject matter-wise, they don't really care what's happening in Manhattan or in D.C. or in San Francisco. They're more curious about Gainesville, Florida, or Omaha, Nebraska.
Yeah, but they should care about what's happening in the rest of the country because it will influence them.
Oh, sure. Yeah, not to say that they shouldn't be disinterested, but I think that, you know, the other papers of record maybe have those boxes ticked. And so what we're interested in doing is finding the other margins that aren't necessarily covered by the major national papers.
Is that what you mean by number two, which is a new kind of individualism?
Yeah, I think that the binary of political partisanship is been broken. And independent thinkers are surely on the rise. Of course, we just finished an election cycle. We're all figuring out exactly what that means for us over the next 4 years. But I think looking at the ways in which people are expressing themselves as individuals, it's ceased to be along this very strict binary between left and right, red or blue, so forth.
Yeah, but that's not individualism. That's like sheeple. They follow.
Oh, I'm saying that they're no longer categorizing themselves into these strict two buckets.
Oh, I disagree with that. Because with this election, it was we're a polarized country right now. The right and the left, and they don't even talk to each other anymore.
Not so much. I mean, I think that, you know, the right is learning how to get along with everybody that's now sitting at their table, and I think that the left is probably irrevocably broken. We'll see what happens.
Now,
over
see
the
what I mean?
Years.
You're doing exactly what's happening in our country. Each one's calling the other one a name instead of trying to get along and figure out or at least listen to the other side. That's gone. There was a time even in the Beltway and in Washington, people actually went across the aisle and talked, or they could argue themselves silly, you know, on the floor. But then they would go out and have a drink together. But that doesn't happen anymore, and that worries me.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I think that people do still break bread, and I think that's a big part of the project of what County Highway is doing, is that we do work with people across all ranges of the political spectrum. So I think in our experience, regardless of where somebody lands on that spectrum, we're happy to work with them, and we do go out for drinks after work.
That's good.
But I think that in the broader sense, what I'm saying is that this stiff binary, where there even is an aisle to walk across, I don't think that that aisle exists anymore. I think that politically, we've become much more fractured than just living in two camps.
Well, we are fractured. No, there's no doubt. I agree with you on that. You also say the return of American grit. What is American grit?
I think that it's a willingness to be forthcoming and earnest in our observations about the world. And there's been a lot of hand-wringing and tiptoeing that's occurred over maybe the last 10 or so years. And I think that a part of what it means to be an American is to be comfortable with your thoughts and feeling empowered to express them as you see fit. And obviously, I think with President Trump's return to the White House, that's been a part of the American experience, is people feeling comfortable to express themselves as maybe they wouldn't have 10 years ago, and that, you know, that's been a mixed bag of results. But American Grit, I think, just in terms of being unapologetic for who we are and taking responsibility for our role as essentially leading the Western world, for better or worse.
So do you cover issues? A couple of examples. The president is talking about taking over Gaza and rebuilding it into a Middle Eastern resort. The Middle Eastern Riviera is what he's calling it. Mm-hmm. Or changing the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America, or taking back the Panama Canal, or taking over or buying Greenland from Denmark. Is that bringing people together? It seems to me it's causing a lot of chaos.
You know, I think it's bringing a lot of people together in their shared concern as to what exactly is going to happen. I just got back from a conference where I was one of the few American journalists, and that was top of everybody's mind. Is this the return of American imperialism, and what does this mean? I was speaking with a Quebecois separatist in Canada who was very concerned about the idea of becoming the 51st state and didn't seem...
Well, of course, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
You know, wouldn't you?
Oh, of course.
I mean, come on. And that's an insult to the country of Canada. That's not by saying our beloved 51st state. No, that's an insult to Canada, and I don't blame them for what they're saying and doing.
No, I can completely understand where they're coming from.
Yeah, and it's, you know, we have to get along. We got our northern neighbors and our southern neighbors. We don't always agree, but we need to get along. Instead of, well, I'm going to put 25% tariffs on Canada and 25% tariffs on Mexico and 10% on China, and say the prices won't go up. You and I both know the prices are going to go up. You know, it's just...
Oh, of course. The illusion as to who's paying the tariffs, it's been fascinating for me to have people not realize that, hey, I know that you guys are very staunch in your, hey, don't tax me anymore, I want smaller government, but these 25% tariffs, it's like, those are actually taxes on you, buddy.
That's exactly it. You're absolutely
right.
Exactly
right.
Okay. You also said another change is the reckoning with legacy. What do you mean?
I mean, this is a part of what we're doing with County Highways, that we're giving our readers an opportunity to feel good about being an American again. And not to necessarily say or suggest that we endorse every single action that is carried out on behalf of the American people by the government, but to give people an opportunity to say that, yeah, sure, there are some ugly parts of the American past that I think we've all done a pretty good job of grokking with. And at the same time, there are a lot of beautiful places and people and stories and music that are worth celebrating. So mm-hmm. finding those opportunities for coverage in County Highway, not to say that we don't have the occasional critical thing that we do either as a piece of investigative reporting or through, you know, we have one opinion column where in every issue we run a Jeremiah ad, which is usually a long-form American screed type essay. But otherwise, we really lean on the essayistic approach and look to the American experience that often gets to celebrate or pay credence towards or recognize some of the aspects of what it means to be an American today that are redeeming.
Yeah.
So I think that that's a part of what we mean by legacy evolving and how we're kind of at the forefront of that.
Well, I got a couple of stories that you should cover. One.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, because I talked to a 13-year-old the other day, and she had no idea about the branches of the government or how the government is run, because they don't teach that in school anymore. They just don't. And I had to explain it all to her, and she was fascinated. She was fascinated by all this. The other time I talked to a very smart lady, and she said that she's worried because her kids don't know cursive anymore. They don't. They can't read writing. They print, and they do their technology, you know, with their phones, etc. And they know about AI, but they don't know how to write anymore. So boomers are. The story is that boomers can take over the country because if we know still how to write, we can read it. And if nobody else can, too bad. Isn't that interesting?
I remember learning how to write in cursive.
I did too.
My cursive isn't terribly good, but I certainly know how to read it.
Yeah, but cursive is not taught in schools anymore.
No.
And neither is our history. If you don't know what our history is, how do you know who we are? You know?
That's right. Yeah, I think that civics and, you know, U.S. government classes, I'm not surprised that there's somebody in the public school system today that didn't know the three different branches of government. I think that, you know, frankly, the public school system has almost been designed to fail.
I agree.
In many respects.
I agree.
And that is a huge stain on our legacy, really, as a country, that we've let down younger generations so consistently over the last 30, 40 years.
Yeah. The pandemic didn't help either, you know, with schools, you know, and that's part of it. But how do you not teach geography and history? What is the old saying that if you don't know history, you're bound to make the same mistakes again? It's true. And the last one, I think, really makes good sense, in number five, and that's the rise of authentic American storytelling. And because, you know, we grew up, I'm old, you know, I'm definitely a boomer. I'm in there real, real strong. But a lot of those stories were told over a campfire, not mine, but, you know, in the West. And people shared stories, and those stories then were committed to paper and books and magazines. And you know, we need to go back to that again. That's part of our American culture, isn't it?
Absolutely. I think that narrative and a love of an oral history is a very classic American trait, and that's something that has always inspired me to sit down and be a writer and work as an editor, is being able to find a way to essentially keep history alive for people. I think that the ability to express the human and American experience in ways that are gripping and engaging for a wide body of people is a real privilege, and it's also a challenge, and it's something that we need more of. To be able to work in that capacity and to be bringing stories from all over the country to our readers, and we have subscribers in all 50 states.
Excellent.
And Canada.
Oh, wonderful.
And so to be able to send people all over the country and occasionally internationally as well to go and gather, you know, what are the realities of the American experience today and help people find commonalities between their experience and, you know, maybe Gainesville to somebody in Omaha and show that hopefully we're not as fractured as maybe it appears.
Yeah.
It's been a really fun project, and a lot of people are picking up what we're printing down.
Yeah, it's amazing. One other story I've got to tell you that just floored me. It was almost laughable, to be honest with you. But I was talking on the phone with someone. I had to give them an address. And the address street was Chuckwagon. They had no idea what a Chuckwagon was. I said, Chuckwagon. You know, the Chuckwagons, they used to come across the country, you know, to the West Coast, and they went, what is that? Chuckwagon. You know, they had no idea what a Chuckwagon is. I don't want us to lose some of those things, you know?
No, of course not. We have to keep our heritage and our history alive, and that's why I think print journalism is really important.
Yes.
Once you print it down, it lives there forever. It's something that you can keep on your coffee table, and you can put in your credenza and, like, keep it for future generations for later, and nobody's going to go in there and mess with what it says.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So how can they get a subscription to County Highway?
So we have a digital microfiche archive that you can find at countyhighway.com.
Okay.
And you can sign up for a print subscription, and then at no additional cost, you get full access to our whole digital microfiche archive, and we'll ship copies directly to your door. You just got to go to countyhighway.com.
That's great. Okay. Keep up the good work, because too many newspapers on a local basis, the big ones are going away. Let's be honest about it. The huge newspapers are dying. They've been dying for quite a few years now. But I sure would like to see the local stay with us. And this is kind of a local, but it's not a local. It's a national local. How's that?
Exactly. We're doing small stories for national audiences, because we believe wherever there's a stop sign, there's a story.
Got it. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to do this. And congratulations to you and David. And who is the other person again?
And Walter Kern.
And Walter, for doing this and keeping those stories going, because they need to be told.
Thank you so much for your interest, Mary Jane.
You bet. Take good care now, and the best of luck to you.
All righty.
Take care.
You too.
Once again, it's Ryan Baseman, and it's called County Highway. Go to countyhighway.com. Coming up, does heaven exist? Well, we're going to take a stab at it and see.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
Stop. That dog does not want to be petted.
Just a little heads up before something bad happens.
Move your coffee cup away from your computer.
Oh, no, 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 no.
So you can have more control.
Stop. You're texting your boss by mistake.
Uh-oh. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes like managing your weight, getting active, stopping smoking, and eating healthier, you can stop prediabetes before it leads to type 2 diabetes. It's easy to learn your risk. Take the 1-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org.
Warning, the cap is loose on that ketchup.
Ugh. Don't wait. You have the power to change the outcome. Visit doihaveprediabetes.org today. That's doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
It's hot to the max in the summer, and your air conditioner gives up the ghost. Who are you going to call? ACP Mechanical, that's who. I did, and I can't believe what a great job they did in my home. It's cool and comfortable with a job well done. Hi, Mary Jane Pop here. Whether it's cooling or heating, Enrique and his ACP Mechanical team can install, repair, commercial or residential, no matter what HVAC system you have or want. And they've done it for over 20 years. Air conditioners, heat pumps, furnaces, thermostats, all quality and affordable solutions. And they're bonded and insured. I know you'll love their work. I do. Call ACP Mechanical, 916-704-8556. That's 916-704-8556 for all your comfort needs. That's ACP Mechanical, 916-704-8556. And expect an expert job well done and right the first time. Questions, questions, and more questions. Does heaven exist? Now, maybe we should talk with a woman who had two near-death experiences. And let's find out what she experienced. And she tells it like it was and is. She is Pastor Nancy Frecka. So perhaps she wouldn't shine us on. with stories of how her meeting with God went down. Her book, God Says, You Can Trust Me. Supernatural Encounters with God has become a beacon of hope for many, many, including Nancy. Hi, Nancy. How are you?
Hello, Mary Jane. I'm good. It's good to talk with you.
Okay, so let's talk about the experience, at least one of the experiences that you had. You had two near-death experiences. Pick out one and give us a scenario.
Well, the first one was in 1981, and I had not been feeling good. And unfortunately, you know, us women have a tendency to put our needs last and the family first.
Mm-hmm.
And I was doing that for a long time, and finally my body caught up with me. And so I ended up going to the ER, and they said I had turned gray, which is not a good color for anybody. And so what happened is they thought I was having a heart attack, and so they gave me Demerol, which I didn't know I was allergic to because I was in so much pain. I felt like I had a spear in my chest.
Oh, God.
And with that, they gave me the Demerol, and it threw me into shock, which threw me into cardiac arrest.
Oh, boy.
And I was flatlined for 15 minutes.
Wow.
And with that, I was in the hospital, and they moved me from the hospital room to the ICU. And I remember laying in bed. And in 1981, no one was talking about near-death experiences. There was no books, movies, nothing on that. And so I had I floated out of my body, and I was watching the whole scene of me laying there and these doctors and nurses frantically trying to save my life. And the doctor said to the nurse, scalpel, and she dropped it. He swore at her. And I'm watching this like a movie.
Wow.
Like, there's no fear, nothing like that. And so as I'm watching it, and he gets another scalpel, and he cuts me open and puts the tube in me, and I float out of the room into a tunnel. Now, today we have lots of words for all this, but in those days, I had never heard of any of this.
Okay.
And so as I was going in the tunnel, the whole time, from the time I was floating out of my body and watching the doctor put the tube in my chest, and that, I never felt any fear, no problems, and no pain, anything like that. So now I'm floating in the tunnel, and it's totally peaceful. There's no fear, nothing like that. And as I come further into it, I start to see a little bit of light, and I start to feel this love. And as I got deeper into the tunnel, that's the only word I know what to use for, and the light got bigger, the love grew. And finally, on the other side of that was all this brilliant light, and there were many spiritual beings that greeted me, and the love was like incredible, like we've never experienced.
Now, I'm sorry to interrupt, but you said spiritual beings. Like, can you explain this?
I call it that because some you know and some you don't, and you know they're. You can't. How can I say it? It's you're not like you are here.
Okay.
And that's the best way I can say it. I mean. I think people who have had this experience know what I mean. You're very light and bright, if you will.
Okay.
And so that's why I call it spiritual beings, because it's not your normal human body.
Okay,
per
gotcha.
Se,
okay.
But you're much lighter and brighter. And so when I came to them and they greeted me, and then they parted and Jesus came to me. And the love that I felt from him was off the Richter scale. It was amazing. And the problem with today is that we don't have unconditional love in our world. No matter how much you love your kids or somebody, there's always conditions to it. But with God, there's no conditions. When you're with him, it's pure love. And so with Jesus, I felt the love I've never felt before, and I wish I could describe it in the truth of what it is at that moment. But there's only the experience that you have when you experience something like that. And because our brain has to have a reference point to connect, to be able to understand something. The Indians years ago said that they didn't understand what a boat was until somebody explained it to them. Then they could see the boat, mm-hmm. When the pilgrims came. And so if you have no reference point, you just don't know what that's like. But so the best way I can explain it is for the woman who's had a baby, and the moment they put that baby in their arms, it's 1,000 times that. And for those that have not had that experience, then the best experience you've ever had times 1,000, and it still doesn't cover it.
Wow.
It's just beyond description.
Now, you said so, you saw...
Go ahead.
I'm curious about this because now we're talking about Jesus and we're talking about God. Is there any difference?
Well, for me, it's the Trinity, the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit.
Yeah.
And Jesus came to me and took me to the light and love of God. And God is light and love. And people say, what's he look like? Well, he just glows. I mean, it's beyond, we can't see in the same sense that we see here.
Okay.
Because it's just a brilliant light. But the love, as much love as I felt from Jesus, it was even more from the Father.
Hmm.
And it was just incredible. And what I can say to them, anybody, it's worth whatever you've got to do to get to heaven. It is. There is nothing on earth that's more important. And I can say that because I've been there twice now.
Yeah.
And neither time did I want to come back. And it didn't mean I didn't love my family or anything like that, but there's just no comparison.
Now, when you had the second one, was it the same type of experience?
No, the second one was, this was 89,
okay.
And I had been in New York at a seminar, and I started having chest pains the night before we were supposed to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And because my girlfriend wanted me to go to the hospital, and I wouldn't go because I knew they'd keep me, and I was in New York, and my kids were in Ohio, and that wasn't going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So I laid on chairs at the seminar till our flight was ready to go, till we could leave on our flight. And the interesting thing about that was that I didn't know at that time you're not supposed to fly when you're having a cardiac incident.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
And I didn't know that. And so we're on the plane and we're sitting in the bulkhead, and these stewardesses were talking with us, and the plane was almost empty. There wasn't many on the plane, and so they had lots of extra time, and for whatever reason we just started talking, the four of us, and we started laughing and laughing and laughing, and we laughed so much that at the end they gave us a bottle of champagne to take with us because they said they have not had that much fun on a flight.
Aww.
What I didn't know, that was God's way of protecting me and getting me home. Because the pressure is not good for the
heart.
For
the cardiac, yeah, that's true.
And I didn't know this. And so I get home, and the reality of you better get to the hospital is now hit me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went to the hospital. And while I was in the hospital, I had another cardiac
arrest
event.
Yeah.
And I floated out of my body. Now, you think that when you see this happen the second time, you know exactly what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't. Your brain doesn't want to deal with it.
Oh.
And so I watched these nurses. They were student nurses. And they kept bringing in blood pressure machines because I didn't have any blood pressure or pulse.
Mm.
And that's your flatline when you don't have a pulse and you don't have any blood pressure. And they did. They brought three in. And that's when, on the third one, is when God took me up. And this time, he took me into the process of life review. And I didn't know anything about this. And so I went through from 81 to 89. After you've been with God, you are changed, and your life changes. And anybody who says, oh, it didn't mean anything to them, didn't have that experience, because millions have had this experience. In fact, the University of Connecticut had, at that time when I had my first experience, they had done a study, and they had studied 8 million events, and they could not believe. Now, these are people who didn't know each other, and it was through a period of time, had very similar stories. Sometimes they would be a little different, but they all had two things in common, but that those that went to heaven had an incredible love that they felt, and they didn't want to come back. And the ones that didn't go to heaven, and I was at, and I'll tell you about that in a second, had a different experience. So when I was, I had the life review, I had cleaned up, I had a real tough childhood, and we talk about that in my my book, God Says You Can Trust Me, because they're incredible. I lived in a haunted house and a whole bunch of other things. And I had a lot of forgiveness to do. And so as God took me through that, by 89, I had given up a lot of the unforgiveness and let go of it. So with this life review, he stops me when I'm 6 years old. Hmm. And it's just like me watching a movie. I'm on in the bed, my bedroom, and my brother Sonny had died, and the neighbor's grandmother came over to say she was sorry, you know, condolences. And she said to her, well, I'm sorry it was Sonny. It should have been Eddie. That was my other brother.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard her say that through the door. And I said, I hate her, and I will never forgive her. And God said, in this review, he showed me, he said, you must forgive her. If you don't, I can't move you forward. And I said, well, that was terrible. And she hurt my mother. And he said, judgment is mine, not yours. And I can't move you forward until you forgive. Forgiveness has nothing to do with saying they were right or it's okay. It has everything to do with being obedient to God. So I said, I don't know how, but I'm willing to. And he said, fine, I'll do the rest. And he did. And there's a whole other story to go with that. But what I got out of those two times being in heaven and with God is that, first of all, the love we feel on earth, the best kind of love that we feel on earth, doesn't even compare to what God's love is. And the second thing is that forgiveness is the answer, no matter what's happened. And I had some pretty horrific things happen. But you have to forgive, because otherwise you're staying stuck, not that other person or thing or event, whatever it may be. And so when you've been with the people who have had the experience that of eight, like the 8 million that were documented at the time, they all had the similar one.
Yeah.
Now, those that didn't go to heaven when they had a near-death experience, we went, after I had the first one, there was a group that got together. I didn't know anybody. There was 30 of us from northeastern Ohio that met at this person's house. And the only thing that we had to do was share our experience.
Mm-hmm.
Two guys out of 30 didn't have the same experience as us 28. 28 of us all felt the love and all of what I described. Those two guys were squirming. And finally, the facilitator said, well, you guys agreed to share your testimony. And they did. And they said, the one guy said, I was an atheist. And the other one said, I was an agnostic.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I didn't believe in God. And he said, and when I died, it was just like the tearing of the and gnashing of the teeth and the horrid sounds and all things that the Bible describes.
Oh, my gosh.
And this guy had never read the Bible. And he said it was horrific. And he cried out, God, help me. And God reached down and pulled him out.
Oh, for
Then The agnostic was crying. Both guys were in tears when they were saying this.
Huh.
And the agnostic guy said he went to, when he was a kid, he was in Sunday school. Mm-hmm. And they taught him the song, Jesus Loves Me. And he said he started hearing that song in his head, and he cried out, Jesus, help me. Jesus loves me. And he started that, and Jesus reached down, pulled him out. And both of them have said that, you know, it was horrific what they went through. And then when God pulled them out, they were fine. And they were able to live their lives as a testimony of God's love and protection.
I'll be darned. So if you could define God, and it's hard to define God, because, I mean, I don't know what your background religion, but I was a Catholic, still am. When I was a child with, you know, catechism, we used to think of God, you know, there's this old man sitting in a big chair with a scepter, you know, and a beard and all that. But that's because a child's mind, that's all we could understand.
Yeah, sure. I was raised Catholic, I understand.
Okay. But I remember in catechism, because I've had some people who were atheists or agnostics, and, you know, they would tell me on the air, well, it has to be faith that you believe because you can't prove there's God. And I said, okay, well, let me ask you a question. I said, what is your definition of energy? And they said, oh, well, energy, it never goes away. It's always going to be there. It'll change forms, but it doesn't die. It doesn't dissipate. I said, okay, well, I remember my catechism. I bet you will too, Nancy. It said, God always was and always will be. Well, what's the difference between that and energy? It changes forms, but it doesn't go away. God may change forms, but he doesn't go away, or she doesn't go. It doesn't go away. It's energy, right?
That's right. Yeah. He is, and I refer to it as he, because how can I say it? There is no issue of gender in heaven.
No. Can't be. It's beyond what we can refer
to him as he, because the Bible refers to him as he.
Well, that's because, you know, the Bible in history was always by man written, you know, so it was always going to be.
Well, that's true, but there is a power in God, and he is light, love, and truth.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you know he's light, love, and truth, the rest doesn't matter.
No, absolutely. I always say our feeble little brains can't even really imagine what the concept is until we experience it, right?
Absolutely. And for anyone that's got some doubts, you know, I would say, you know, simply ask God to reveal himself to you and in a way that means something to you. I've had lots of people do that, and it comes in multiple forms. I mean, some people need a little bit more convincing, and others don't.
Mm-hmm.
But no matter what, God wants you and everyone else to know that he's real and he loves you. And the love he has for us is far greater than anything we can imagine. This, when one of my interviews on one of my other books, the host asked me, you know, about this, and I said to him, I wish for everybody that they would die, have a near-death experience, and come back. And he goes, why would you say that? And I said, because they know that God loves them, and mm-hmm. this world would be a different place.
Yeah, that's...
Once you've experienced that love, nothing else is more important.
I believe you're absolutely right. That's because our world today is not a very loving place, unfortunately. I wish it was. But there's always still hope, isn't there?
Absolutely. And, you know, that's the thing. If people could forgive, and I know it's the hardest thing in the world to do, and I had a whole litany of things that I had to forgive, and it wasn't easy. But I got to tell you, it's so freeing. It gives you the freedom you never knew you wanted.
That's interesting. So when you talk about God and Jesus or the Trinity, you know, it is Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. I grew up the same way. How do you describe it? Is it an energy. You say it's a light, a bright light that is love. That to me seems like energy, doesn't it?
It is. But, you know, energy takes form in what you need. I mean, if I knew all these answers as far as what specifically makes up God, I'd be God. But I'm not.
Yeah.
But I can tell you that when you're in his presence, even here on earth, when you pray and you feel the presence of the Holy Spirit, it touches you in a way that nothing else can. And when you do that, you feel his love.
Yeah.
And it can heal you in any area of your life. I mean, I have been healed so many times of so many things. And when I've gone through so much with health issues, I was born blind and with translucent skin because my mother was an Rh negative factor and I was OB positive. And in those days, I hate to say those days, but in those days, the child died.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was incompatible. And I ended up being blinded with translucent skin. Well, by the grace of God, he healed me. I have, I'm able to see and have normal skin. And throughout my life, I've had all kinds of issues. But God's brought me through everything. And I think the most important thing is to know that God is supernatural and that everyone can hear his voice. And it's important to know that supernatural world is not fiction. It's reality and how it affects you. And the enemy would say, oh, it's just, like Harry Potter or something like that. Well,
yeah.
It's far more,
yeah.
Far more.
Yeah.
And so when you learn to listen and hear the voice of God, he will guide you, protect you, and provide for you. And I'm a living testimony, and the book has all kinds of stories in it. Of how God's brought me through things and provided for me in fun ways as well as brought me through life-threatening things.
Got it.
And now, when we do follow him and trust him, there are rewards.
Yeah.
And that's what people seem to forget sometimes,
mm-hmm.
that there is rewards for being faithful. And the Bible says that clearly, that he rewards the faithful.
Gotcha.
Doesn't always look what you want it to. And that's the thing about trusting God. I have to say that in the adventures I've had in the episodes with God, many times it didn't make sense in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
But not once did I ever regret from following his lead.
Amazing.
After it was done.
Well, let me ask you a question. Do you have a website?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
It's called GodIsSupernatural.com.
God is Supernatural. And your book, where is it available?
Amazon.
Okay. All right. And who knows what tomorrow will hold? Maybe you'll have another experience. We never know, do we?
No, we don't. I have lots of experiences, but I had to limit it to what he wanted me to write about in the book. And people tell me that they laugh, they cry, and they can't put it down. That's what I'm told.
Oh, fantastic. Well, I really appreciate your being with me, Nancy, and for sharing your stories, because in this day and age, well, I guess in any age, it's necessary to have something to believe and to hang on to.
I agree.
Terrific.
And it's been a pleasure to talk with you, and I wish you the very best, and God bless you.
And right back at you. You take care now.
Thank you.
Nancy Freca, F-R-E-C-K-A. And it's GodIsSupernatural.com. That's her website. Name of the book, God Says, You Can Trust Me. Supernatural Encounters with God. Unbelievable. Hey, listen, folks. I want to leave you with a couple of thoughts today because I think these stories are so important. First of all, faith is the highest passion in a human being. And don't let people say, well, it's just all faith. Yeah? Well, we have to have faith. Faith in something. Someone, some way, all of that. And in the meantime, live simply, laugh often, love deeply, and above all else, dare to dream. How can you make a dream come true if you didn't have it to begin with? We'll talk with you next time right here on Pop Talk.